Mr. Cook, those succulent bivalves may help us, and the truffles of Perigord, tubers dislodged through Mr. Omnivorous Porker, were unsurpassed in cases of nervous debility or viragitis. Though they stink, yet they sting. He wags head with cackling raillery. Jocular! With my eyeglass in my ocular! Bloom, absently. Ocularly, woman's bivalve case is worse. Always open sesame. The cloven sex. Why, they fear vermin, creeping things. Yet Eve and the serpent contradict. Not a historical fact. Obvious analogy to my idea. Serpents, too, are gluttons for woman's milk. Wind their way through miles of omnivorous forest to suck succulent her breast dry. Like those bubbly jocular Roman matrons one reads of in Elephantulises. Virag, his mouth projected in hard wrinkles, eyes stonily forlornly closed, psalms in outlandish monotone. That the cows with their those distended others, that they have been the known. Bloom, I'm going to scream. I beg your pardon. Ah, so, he repeats, spontaneously to seek out the Saurian's lair in order to entrust their teats to his avid suction. Ant milks aphis. Profoundly, instinct rules the world, in life, in death. Virag, head askew, arches his back, and hunched wing shoulders, peers at the moth out of blear bulged eyes, points a horning claw, and cries,
Who's Jer-Jer? Who's dear Gerald?
Oh, I much fear he shall be most badly burned.
Will some pleased person, not now impediment, so catastrophics mid agitation of first-class table numpkin?
He mused.
Lus, puss, puss, puss.
He sighs, draws back, and stares sideways down with dropping underjaw.
Well, well, he doth rest anon. I'm a tiny, tiny thing, ever flying in the spring. Round and round a ring, long ago I was a king. Now I do this kind of thing, on the wing, bing!
He rushes against the mauve shade, flapping noisily.
Pretty, 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 pretty petticoats.
From left upper entrance with two sliding steps, Henry Flower comes forward to left front center. He wears a dark mantle and drooping plume sombrero. He carries a silver-stringed inlaid dulcimer and a long-stemmed bamboo Jacob's pipe, its clay bowl fashioned as a female head. He wears dark velvet hose and silver-buckled pumps. He has the romantic saviour's face, with flowing locks, thin beard and moustache. His spindle legs and sparrow feet are those of the tenor Mario, Prince of Candia. He settles down his goffered ruffs and moistens his lips with the passage of his amorous tongue. Henry, in a low dulcet voice, touching the strings of his guitar.
There is a flower that bloometh.
Virag, truculent, his jowl set, stares at the lamp. Grave Bloom regards Zoe's neck. Henry, gallant, turns with pendant dewlap to the piano. Stephen, to himself, play with your eyes shut. Imitate Pa. Filling my belly with husks of swine. Too much of this. I will arise and go to my... Expect this is the... Steve, thou art in a parlous way. Must visit old DC, or telegraph. Our interview of this morning has left on me a deep impression, though our ages will write fully tomorrow. I'm partially drunk, by the way. He touches the keys again. Minor chord comes now. Yes. Not much, however. Almidano Artifoni holds out a baton roll of music with vigorous moustache work. Artifoni.
Ci rifletta, lei rovina tutto.
Flory.
Sing us something. Love's old sweet song.
Stephen. No voice. I am a most finished artist.
Lynch, did I show you the letter about the lute?
Flory, smirking. The bird that can sing and won't sing. The Siamese twins, Philip drunk and Philip sober, two Oxford dons with lawnmowers, appear in the window embrasure. Both are masked with Matthew Arnold's face. Philip sober.
Take a fool's advice. All is not well. Work it out with the butt end of a pencil like a good young idiot. £3.12 you got. 2 notes, 1 sovereign, 2 crowns, if youth but knew. Mooney's Envie, Mooney's Sur Mer, the Moira, La Chaise, Holler Street Hospital, Burke's. Eh? I am watching you.
Philip drunk, impatiently.
Oh, boss man, go to hell. I paid my way. If I could only find out about octaves, reduplication of personality. Who was it told me his name?
His lawnmower begins to purr.
Ah, yes. Zoe Musazagapo. Have a notion I was here before. When was it not? Atkinson. His card I have somewhere. Mac somebody. Un-Mac. I have it. He told me about... Hold on. Swinburne, was it? No?
Flory. And the song? Stephen.
Spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.
Florrie.
Are you out of Minute? You're like someone I knew once.
Stephen. Out of it now. To himself. Clever. Philip drunk and Philip sober. The lawnmowers purring with the rigadoon of grass arms.
Clever ever. Out of it. Out of it. By the way, have you the book, the thing, the ash plant? Yes, there it is. Clever ever. Out of it now. Keep in condition. Do like us.
Zoe. There was the priest down there 2 nights ago to do his bit of business, with his coat buttoned up. You needn't try to hide, I say to him. I know you've a Roman collar. Virag. Perfectly logical from his standpoint. Fall of man. Harshly, his pupils waxing. The hell with the Pope. Nothing new under the sun. I am the Virag who disclosed the sex secrets of monks and maidens. Why I left the Church of Rome. Read the priest, the woman, and the confessional. Penrose, flippity-gibbet. He wriggles. Woman, undoing her sweet poudre, her belt of rush rope, offers her almost the only to man's lingam. Short time after, man presents woman with pieces of jungle meat. Woman shows joy and covers herself with feather skins. Man loves her yoni fiercely with big lingam, the stiff one. He cries, "Coactus volui!" Then giddy woman will run about. Strong man grasps woman's wrists. Woman squeals, bites, spucks. Man, now fierce, angry, strikes woman's fat yagana. He chases his tail. Piff-paff, popo! He stops, sneezes. Pip-shee! He worries his butt. Lynch. I hope you gave the good father a penance. 9 glorious for shooting the bishop. Zoe. Spouts walrus smoke through her nostrils.
He couldn't get a connection. Only, you know, sensation. A dry rush.
Bloom. Poor man. Zoe. Lightly.
Only for what happened him.
Bloom.
How?
Virag. A diabolic rictus of black luminosity contracting his visage. Cranes his scraggy neck forward. He lifts a moon-carved nozzle and howls.
Verfluchte Goyim! He had a father, 40 fathers, he never existed, pig god. He had 2 left feet, he was Judas Acacius, a Libyan eunuch, the Pope's bastard.
He leans out in tortured forepaws, elbows bent rigid, his eye agonizing in his flat skull neck, and yelps over the mute world.
A son of a whore! Apocalypse!
Kitty.
And Mary Shortall, that was in the lock, with the pox she got from Jimmy Pigeon in the blue caps, had a child orphan that couldn't swallow, and was smothered with the convulsions in the mattress, and we all subscribed for the funeral.
Philip drunk, gravely.
Qui vous a mis dans cette fichue position, Philippe?
Philip sober, gaily.
C'était le sacré pigeon, Philippe.
Kitty unpins her hat and sets it down calmly, patting her henna hair. And a prettier, a daintier head of winsome curls was never seen on a whore's shoulders. Lynch puts on her hat. She whips it off. Lynch laughs.
And to such delights has Metchnikoff inoculated anthropoid apes.
Florrie nods.
Locomotor, a taxi.
Zoe, gaily.
Oh, my dictionary.
Lynch. 3 wise virgins. Virag, ague-shaken, profuse yellow spawn foaming over his bony epileptic lips.
She sold the love philtres, white wax, orange flower, panther, the Roman centurion polluted her with his genitories.
He sticks out a flickering phosphorescent scorpion tongue, his hand on his fork.
Messiah, he burst her tympanum.
With gibbering baboon's cries, he jerks his hips in the cynical spasm.
Hick, hick, hack, huck, hook, cock, cook.
Ben Jumbo Dollard, rubicund, muscle-bound, hairy-nostrilled, huge-bearded, cabbage-eared, shaggy-chested, shock-maned, fat-papped, stands forth, his loins and genitals tightened into a pair of black bathing bag-slops. Ben Dollard, knackering castanet bones in his huge padded paws, yodels jovially in bass barrel tone.
When love absorbs my ardent soul...
The virgins, Nurse Callan and Nurse Quigley, burst through the ringkeepers and the ropes and mob him with open arms. The virgins, gushingly,
Big Ben! Ben McCree!
A voice, Hold that fellow with the bad breeches! Ben Dollard smites his thigh in abundant laughter.
Hold him now!
Henry, caressing on his breast a severed female head, murmurs, Thine heart, mine love. He plucks his lute strings.
When first I saw...
Virag. Sloughing his skins, his multitudinous plumage molting.
Rats!
He yawns, showing a coal-black throat, and closes his jaws by an upward push of his parchment roll.
After having said which, I took my departure. Farewell, fare thee well. Drek!
Henry Flower combs his moustache and beard rapidly with the pocket comb, and gives a cow's lick to his hair. Steered by his rapier, he glides to the door, his wild harp slung behind him.
Virag reaches the door in two ungainly stilt hops, his tail cocked, and deftly claps sideways on the wall a pus-yellow flybill, batting it with his head. The flybill.
K2, postal bills, strictly confidential, Dr. High Franks.
Henry. All is lost now. Virag unscrews his head in a trice and holds it under his arm. Virag's head.
Quack!
Exeunt severally. Stephen, over his shoulder to Zoe.
You would have preferred the fighting parson who founded the Protestant era. But beware Antisthenes, the dog sage, and the last end of Arius Heresiarchus, the agony in the closet.
Lynch. All one and the same god to her. Stephen, devoutly.
And sovereign lord of all things.
Florrie to Stephen.
I'm sure you're a spoiled priest, or a monk.
Lynch.
He is, a cardinal's son.
Stephen.
Cardinal sin, monks of the screw.
His Eminence, Simon Stephen Cardinal Dedalus, Primate of All Ireland, appears in the doorway, dressed in red soutane, sandals and socks. Seven dwarf simian acolytes, also in red, cardinal sins, uphold his train, peeping under it. He wears a battered silk hat sideways on his head. His thumbs are stuck in his armpits, and his palms outspread. Round his neck hangs a rosary of corks, ending on his breast in a corkscrew cross. Releasing his thumbs, he invokes grace from on high with large wave gestures and proclaims with bloated pomp, the cardinal.
Conservio lies captured. He lies in the lowest dungeon, with manacles and chains around his limbs, weighing upwards of 3 tons.
He looks at all for a moment, his right eye closed tight, his left cheek puffed out. Then, unable to repress his merriment, he rocks to and fro, arms akimbo, and sings with broad, rollicking humour.
Oh, the poor little fellow, his legs, they were yellow. He was plump, fat and heavy, and brisk as a snake. But some bloody savage, to graze his white cabbage, he murdered Nell Flaherty's duck-loving drake.
A multitude of midges swarms over his robe. He scratches himself with crossed arms at his ribs, grimacing, and exclaims,
I'm suffering the agony of the damned. By the hokey fiddle, thanks be to Jesus, those funny little chaps are not unanimous. If they were, they'd walk me off to the face of the bloody globe.
His head aslant, he blesses curtly with 4 and middle fingers, imparts the Easter kiss, and double shuffles off comically, swaying his hat from side to side, shrinking quickly to the size of his train-bearers. The dwarf acolytes, giggling, peeping, nudging, ogling, Easter-kissing, zigzag behind him. His voice is heard mellow from afar. Merciful, male, melodious.
Shall carry my heart to thee, shall carry my heart to thee, and the breath of the balmy night shall carry my heart to thee.
The trick door handle turns. The door handle.
Thee.
Zoe, the devil is in that door. A male form passes down the creaking staircase and is heard taking the waterproof and hat from the rack. Bloom starts forward involuntarily, and half-closing the door as he passes, takes the chocolate from his pocket and offers it nervously to Zoe. Zoe sniffs his hair briskly.
Thank you, Mother, for the rabbits. I'm very fond of what I like.
Bloom, hearing a male voice in talk with the whores on the doorstep, pricks his ears.
If it were he, after. Or because not. Or the double event.
Zoe tears open the silver foil.
Fingers were made before forks.
She breaks off and nibbles a piece, gives a piece to Kitty Ricketts, and then turns kittenishly to Lynch.
No objection to French lozenges?
He nods. She taunts him.
Have it now or wait till you get it.
He opens his mouth, his head cocked. She wheels the prize in left circle. His head follows. She wheels it back in right circle. He eyes her.
Catch!
She tosses a piece. With an adroit snap, he catches it and bites it through with a crack. Kitty, chewing.
The engineer I was with at the bazaar does have lovely ones, full of the best liqueurs, and the viceroy was there with his lady. The gas we had on the Toff's hobby horses, I'm giddy still.
Bloom, in Svengali's fur overcoat, with folded arms and Napoleonic forelock, frowns in ventriloquial exorcism with piercing eagle glance towards the door. Then, rigid with left foot advanced, he makes a swift pass with impelling fingers and gives the sign of past master, drawing his right arm downwards from his left shoulder.
Go, 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 I conjure you, whoever you are.
A male cough and tread are heard passing through the mist outside. Bloom's features relax. He places a hand in his waistcoat, posing calmly. Zoe offers him chocolate. Bloom, solemnly. Thanks, Zoe.
Do as you bid. Here.
A firm heel clacking is heard on the stairs. Bloom takes the chocolate. aphrodisiac, but I thought it vanilla calms, or Minemo. Confused light confuses memory. Red influences lupus. Colors affect women's characters, any they have. This black makes me sad. Eat and be merry for tomorrow. He eats. Influence tastes too, mauve. But it is so long since I seems new. Afro, that priest must come. Better late than never. Try truffles at Andrews. The door opens. Bella Cohen, a massive whoremistress, enters. She is dressed in a three-quarter ivory gown, fringe round the hem with tasseled selvage, and cools herself, flirting a black horn fan like Minnie Hawk and Carmen. On her left hand are wedding and keeper rings. Her eyes are deeply carboned. She has a sprouting moustache. Her olive face is heavy, slightly sweated and full-nosed, with orange-tainted nostrils. She has large pendant beryl eardrops. Bella.
My word, I'm all of a muck sweat.
She glances around her at the couples, then her eyes rest on Bloom, with hard insistence. Her large fan winnows wind towards her heated face, neck and embonpoint. Her falcon eyes glitter. The fan, flirting quickly, then slowly.
Married, I see.
Bloom. Yes, partly. I have mislaid. The fan, half opening, then closing.
And the missus's master? Petticoat government?
Bloom looks down with a sheepish grin.
That is so.
The fan, folding together, rests against her eardrop.
Have you forgotten me?
Bloom.
Ness? Yo.
The fan, folded akimbo against her waist.
Is me her was you dream before? Was then she him you us since knew? Am all them and the same now we?
Bella approaches, gently tapping with the fan. Bloom, wincing.
Powerful being, in my eyes read that slumber which women love.
The fan, tapping.
We have met. You are mine. It is fate.
Bloom, cowed. Exuberant female, enormously I desiderate your domination. I am exhausted, abandoned, no more young. I stand, so to speak, with an unposted letter bearing the extra regulation fee before the too-late box of the General Post Office of Human Life. The door and window open at a right angle cause a draft of 32 feet per second according to the law of falling bodies. I have felt this instant a twinge of sciatica in my left gluteal muscle. It runs in our family. Poor dear Papa, a widower, was a regular barometer from it. He believed in animal heat. A skin of tabby lined his winter waistcoat. Near the end, remembering King David and the Sunamite, he shared his bed with Athos, faithful after death. A dog spittle, as you probably... He winces.
Ah!
Richard Goulding. Bag-weighted, passes the door.
Mocking his catch, best value and dub, fit for a prince's liver and kidney.
The fan, tapping.
All things end, be mine, now.
Bloom, undecided. All, now? I should not have parted with my talisman. Rain, exposure, a dewfall on the sea rocks, a peccadillo at my time of life. Every phenomenon has a natural cause. The fan points downward slowly.
You may.
Bloom looks downward and perceives her unfastened bootlace.
We are observed.
The fan points downward quickly.
You must.
Bloom, with desire, with reluctance. I can make a true black knot. Learned when I serve my time and work the mail order line for Kellett's. Experienced hand. Every knot says a lot. Let me, in courtesy. I knelt once before today. Ah. Bella raises her gown slightly, and steadying her pose, lifts to the edge of a chair a plump buskined hoof and a full pastern, silk-socked. Bloom, stiff-legged, aging, bends over her hoof, and with gentle fingers draws out and in her laces. Bloom murmurs lovingly, "To be a shoe-fitter in Mansfield's was my love's young dream, the darling joys of sweet button-hooking, to lace up criss-cross to knee-length the dressy kid footwear satin-lined, so incredibly small, of Clyde Road ladies. Even their wax model Raymond I visited daily, to admire her cobweb hose and stick of rhubarb toe, as worn in Paris." The hoof.
"Smell my hot goat hide. Feel my royal weight."
Bloom, cross-lacing.
"Too tight?"
The hoof.
"If you bungle Handy Andy, I'll kick your football for you."
Bloom. "Not to lace the wrong eyelet, as I did the night of the bizarre dance. Bad luck. Nook in wrong tash of her. The person you mentioned, that night she met. Now." He knots the lace. Bella places her foot on the floor. Bloom raises his head. Her heavy face, her eyes, strike him in mid-brow. His eyes grow dull, darker, and pouched. His nose thickens. Bloom mumbles, "Awaiting your further orders, we remain, gentlemen." Bellow, with a hard basilisk stare, in a baritone voice,
"Hound of dishonor!"
Bloom, infatuated, "Empress!" Bellow, his heavy cheek-chops sagging,
"Adorer of the adulterous rump!"
Bloom, plaintively, "Hugeness!
Bellow. Dung devourer. Bloom, with sinews semi-flexed. Magnificence. Bellow. Down. He taps her on the shoulder with his fan.
Incline feet forward. Slide left foot one pace back. You will fall. You are falling. On the hands. Down.
Bloom. Her eyes upturned in the sign of admiration. Closing.
Truffles.
With a piercing epileptic cry, she sinks on all fours, grunting, snuffling, rooting at his feet, then lies shamming dead, with eyes shut tight, trembling eyelids, bowed upon the ground in the attitude of most excellent master. Bellow, with bobbed hair, purple gills, fat moustache rings around his shaven mouth, in mountaineer's puttees, green silver button coat, sport skirt and alpine hat with moorcock's feather, his hand stuck deep in his breeches pocket, places his heel on her neck and grinds it in.
Feel my entire weight. Bow, bondslave, before the throne of your despot's glorious heels, so glistening in their proud erectness.
Bloom, enthralled, bleats.
I promise never to disobey.
Bellow, laughs loudly.
Holy smoke! You little know what's in store for you. I'm the target to settle your little lot and break you in. I'll bet Kentucky cocktails all round. I'll shame it out, you old son. Cheek me, I dare you. If you do, tremble in anticipation of heel discipline to be inflicted in gym costume.
Bloom creeps under the sofa and peers out through the fringe. Zoe, widening her slip to screen her.
She's not here.
Bloom, closing her eyes.
She's not here.
Flurry, hiding her with her gown.
She didn't mean him, Mr. Bellow. She'd be good, sir.
Kitty.
Don't be too hard on her, Mr. Bellow. Sure you won't, ma'am, sir.
Bellow, coaxingly.
Come, ducky dear, I want a word with you, darling, just to administer correction. Just a little heart-to-heart talk, sweetie.
Bloom puts out her timid head.
There's a good girlie now.
Bellow grabs her hair violently and drags her forward.
I only want to correct you for your own good on a soft, safe spot. How's that tender behind? Oh, ever so gently, pet. Begin to get ready.
Bloom, fainting.
Don't tear my...
Bellow, savagely.
The nose ring, the pliers, the bastinado, the hanging hook, the knout I'll make you kiss while the flutes play like the Nubian slave of old. You're in for it this time. I'll make you remember me for the balance of your natural life.
His forehead veins swollen, his face congested.
I shall sit on your ottoman saddleback every morning after my thumped good breakfast of Matteson's fat ham rashers and a bottle of Guinness's porter.
He belches,
and suck my thumping good stock exchange cigar while I read the Lyson Fittler's Gazette.
Very possibly I shall have you slaughtered and skewered in my stables, and enjoy a slice of you with crisp crackling from the bacon tin, basted and baked like sucking pig with rice and lemon or curtain sauce. It will hurt you. He twists her arm. Bloom squeaks, turning turtle.
Bloom, don't be cruel, nurse, don't.
Bellow, twisting,
another.
Bloom screams,
oh, it's hell itself. Every nerve in my body aches like mad.
Bellow shouts,
good, by the rumpin' jumpin' genital, that's the best bit of news I've heard these 6 weeks. Here, don't keep me waiting, damn ya.
He slaps her face. Bloom whimpers,
you're after hitting me, I'll tell.
Bellow,
hold him down, girl, till I squat on him.
Zoe,
yes, walk on him, I will.
Flurry,
I will, don't be greedy, Kitty. No, me, lend him to me.
The brothel cook, Mrs. Keogh, wrinkled, grey-bearded, in a greasy bib, men's grey and green socks and brogues, flour-smeared, a rolling pin stuck with raw pastry in her bare red arm and hand, appears at the door. Mrs. Keogh, ferociously,
can I help?
They hold and pinion Bloom. Bellow squats with a grunt on Bloom's upturned face, puffing cigar smoke, nursing a fat leg.
I've seen Keating Clay is elected chairman of the Richmond Asylum, and by the by, Guinness's preference shares are at 16 3/4. Curse me for a fool that I didn't buy that lot Craig and Gardner told me about. Just my infernal luck, curse it, and that goddamned outsider throwaway at 20-1.
He quenches his cigar angrily on Bloom's ear.
Where's that goddamned cursed ashtray?
Bloom, goaded, buttock smothered.
Oh, monsters, cruel one.
Bellow,
ask for that every 10 minutes. Beg, pray for it as you never prayed before.
He thrusts out a figged fist and foul cigar.
Here, kiss that. Bolt, kiss.
He throws a leg astride and, pressing with horseman's knees, calls in a hard voice,
Gee up a cock horse to Banbury Cross. I'll ride him for the Eclipse Stakes.
He bends sideways and squeezes his mount's testicles, roughly shouting,
Ho, off we pop. I'll nurse you in proper fashion.
He horse rides cock horse, leaping in the saddle. The lady goes a pace, and the coachman goes a trot, and the gentleman goes a gallop, a gallop, a gallop, a gallop. Flurry pulls at Bello.
Let me on him now. You had enough. I asked before you.
Zoe, pulling at Flurry.
Me. Are you not finished with him yet, Sir Caress?
Bloom, stifling.
Can't.
Bello.
Well, I'm not. Wait.
He holds in his breath.
Curse it. Here, this bung's about burst.
He uncorks himself behind, then contorting his features, farts loudly.
Take that!
He recorks himself.
Yes, by jingo, 16 3/4.
Bloom, a sweat breaking out over him.
Not man, he sniffs. Woman!
Bello stands up.
No more blow hot and cold. What you long for has come to pass. Henceforth you are unmanned, and mine in earnest, a thing under the yoke. Now for your punishment frock. You will shed your male garments, you understand, Ruby Cohen, and don the shot silk luxuriously rustling over head and shoulders, and quickly too.
Bloom shrinks.
Silk, mistress said, oh, crinkly, scrapy, must I tip-touch it with my nails?
Bello points to his whores.
As they are now, so will you be, wigged, singed, perfume-sprayed, rice-powdered, with smooth-shaven armpits. Tape measurements will be taken next your skin. You will be laced with cruel force into voice-like corsets of soft dove coteel, with whalebone busked to the diamond-trimmed pelvis, the absolute outside edge, while your figure, plumper than when at large, will be restrained in net-tight frocks, pretty two-ounce petticoats, and fringes and things stamped, of course, with my house flag, creations of lovely lingerie for Alice, and nice scent for Alice. Alice will feel the pull-pull. Martha and Mary will be a little chilly at first in such delicate thigh casing, but the frilly flimsiness of lace around your bare knees will remind you.
Bloom. A charming soubrette, with dauby cheeks, mustard hair, and large male hands and nose, leering mouth.
I tried her things on only once, a small prank, in Hollis Street. When we were hard up, I washed them to save the laundry bill. My own shirts I turned. It was the purest thrift.
Bello jeers.
Little jobs that make mother pleased, eh? And showed off coquettishly in your domino at a mirror, behind closed-drawn blinds, your unskirted thighs and he-goat's udders in various poses of surrender, eh? Ho, ho, I have to laugh. That second-hand black opera top shift and short-trunked leg naughties all split up the stitches at our last rape that Mrs. Miriam Dandrade sold you from the Shelburne Hotel, eh?
Bloom.
Miriam, black, demi-mundane.
Bello guffaws.
Christ almighty, it's too tickling, this. You were a nice-looking Miriam when you clipped off your back-gate hairs and lay swooning in the thing across the bed as Mrs. Dandaraid, about to be violated by Lieutenant Smith Smythe, Mr. Philip Augustus Blockwell, M.P., Signor Lachie de Ramo, the robust tenor, blue-eyed Bertha Liftboy, Henry Fleury of Gordon Bennett's fame, Sheridan the Quadroon Creases, the Varsity Wet Bob 8 from Old Trinity, Ponto her splendid Newfoundland, and Bob's Dowager Duchess of Manorham. Hamilton.
He guffaws again.
Christ, wouldn't it make a Siamese cat laugh?
Bloom, her hands and features working.
It was Gerald converted me to be a true corset lover when I was a female impersonator in the high school play Vice Versa. It was dear Gerald. He got that kink, fascinated by sister stays. Now dearest Gerald uses pinky grease paint and gilds his eyelids. Cult of the beautiful.
Bello, with wicked glee.
Beautiful! Give us a breather. When you took your seat with womanish care, lifting your billowy flounces on the smooth-worn throne.
Bloom.
Science, to compare the various joys we each enjoy, earnestly, and really it's better the position, because often I used to wet...
Bello.
Sternly, no insubordination. The sawdust is there in the corner for you. I gave you strict instructions, didn't I? Do it standing, sir! I'll teach you to behave like a gentleman. If I catch a trace on your swaddles, aha, by the ass of the Dordans, you'll find I'm a martinet. The sins of your past are rising against you. Many. Hundreds.
The sins of the past, in a medley of voices.
He went through a form of clandestine marriage with at least one woman in the shadow of the Black Church. Unspeakable messages he telephoned mentally to Miss Dunn at an address in Delir Street, while he presented himself indecently to the instrument in the call box. By word and deed, he encouraged a nocturnal strumpet to deposit fecal and other matter in an insanitary outhouse attached to empty premises. In 5 public conveniences, he wrote pencil messages offering his nuptial partner to all strong-membered males, and by the offensively smelling vitriol works, did he not pass night after night by loving courting couples to see if and what and how much he could see? Did he not lie in bed, the gross bore, gloating over a nauseous fragment of well-used toilet paper presented him by a nasty harlot, stimulated by gingerbread and a postal order?
Bello whistles loudly.
Say, what was the most revolting piece of obscenity in all your career of crime? Go the whole hog, puke it out, be candid for once.
Mute, inhuman faces throng forward, leering, vanishing, gibbering, boo-loo-hoom. Poldycock, bootlaces a penny, Cassidy's hag, blind stripling, Larry Rhinoceros, the girl, the woman, the whore, the other, the... Bloom, don't ask me, our mutual faith, Pleasant Street, I only thought the half of... I swear on my sacred oath. Bellow, peremptorily.
Answer, repugnant wretch, I insist on knowing. Tell me something to amuse me. Smut, or a bloody good ghost story, or a line of poetry. Quick, 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 where? How? What time? With how many? I give you just 3 seconds. 1, 2, 3.
Bloom, docile, gurgles. I re-repugnosed in re-re-re-repugnant. Bellow, imperiously.
Oh, get out, you skunk, hold your tongue. Speak when you're spoken to.
Bloom bows. Master, mistress, man-tamer. He lifts his arms. His bangle bracelets fall. Bellow, satirically.
By day you will souse and batter smelling underclothes. Also when we ladies are unwell and swab out our latrines with dress pinned up and a dishclout tied to your tail. Won't that be nice?
He places a ruby ring on her finger.
And there now, with this ring I the own. Say thank you, mistress.
Bloom, thank you, mistress. Bellow.
You will make the beds, get my tub ready, empty the piss-pots in the different rooms, including old Mrs. Cho's, the cook's, a sandy one. Aye, and rinse the 7 of them well, mind, or lap it up like champagne. Drink me, piping hoss. Hop! You will dance attendance, or I'll lecture you on your misdeeds, Miss Ruby, and spank your bare bot right well, miss, with a hairbrush. You'll be taught the error of your ways. At night, your well-creamed braceleted hands will wear 43 buttoned gloves, new powdered with talc, and having delicately scented fingertips. For such favours, knights of old lay down their lives. He chuckles. My boys will be no end charmed to see you so ladylike, the colonel above all. When they come here the night before the wedding to fondle my new attraction in gilded heels. First, I'll have a go at you myself. A man I know on the turf named Charles Alberta Marsh. I was in bed with him just now, and another gentleman out of the Hanover and Petty Bag Office is on the lookout for a maid of all work at a short knock. Swell the bust, smile, droop shoulders. What offers? He points. For that lot trained by owner to fetch and carry basket in mouth.
He bares his arm and plunges it elbow deep in Bloom's vulva.
There's a fine depth for you. What, boys? That give you a hard on?
He shoves his arm in a bidder's face. Here, wet the deck and wipe it round. A bidder. A florin. Dylan's lackey rings his handbell. A voice. 1 and 8 pence too much. The lackey. Barang. Charles Alberta Marsh. Must be a virgin. Good breath. Clean. Bellow gives a rap with his gavel.
2 bar, rock-bottom figure, and cheap at the price, 14 hands high. Touch and examine his points. Handle him. This downy skin, those soft muscles, this tender flesh. If I had only my gold piercer here, and quite easy to milk, 3 new-laid gallons a day. A pure stock-getter, due to lay within the hour. His sire's milk record was 1,000 gallons of whole milk in 40 weeks. Whoa, my jewel, back up, whoa!
He brands his initial C on Bloom's croup.
So, warranted Cohen. What advance on 2 bob, gentlemen?
A dark-visaged man, in disguised accent.
100 punks sterling.
Voices subdued.
For the Caliph Harun al-Rashid.
Bellow, gaily.
Right, let them all come. The scanty, daringly short skirt, riding up at the knee to show a peep of white pantalette, is a potent weapon, and transparent stockings, emerald gartered, with a long straight seam trailing up behind the knee, appeal to the better instincts of the blasé man about town.
Learn the smooth, mincing walk on 4-inch Louis XV heels, the Grecian bend with provoking croup, the thighs fluorescent, knees modestly kissing. Bring all your power of fascination to bear on them. Pander to their Gomorran vice. Bloom bends his blushing face into his armpit and simpers with forefinger in mouth.
Oh, I know what you're hinting at now.
Bellow.
What else are you good for, an impotent thing like you?
He stoops and, peering, pokes with his fan rudely under the fat suet folds of Bloom's haunches.
Up! Up, Manx cat! What have we here? Where's your curly teapot gone to, or who docked it on your cocky ollie? Sing, birdie, sing! It's as limp as a boy of 6 is doing his poolie behind the cart. Buy a bucket or sell your pump.
Loudly.
Can you do a man's job?
Bloom. Eccles Street.
Bellow sarcastically. I wouldn't hurt your feelings for the world, but there's a man of brawn in possession there. The tables are turned, my gay young fella. He is something like a full-grown outdoor man. Well for you, you muff, if you had that weapon with knobs and lumps and warts all over it. He shot his bolt, I can tell you. Foot to foot, knee to knee, belly to belly, bubs to breast. He's no eunuch. A shock of red hair he has sticking out of him behind a kafura's bush. Wait for 9 months, my lad. Holy ginger, it's kicking and coughing up and down in our guts already. That makes you wild, don't it? Touches the spot. He spits in contempt. Spittoon! Bloom. I was indecently treated. I informed the police. £100. Unmentionable. I... Bellow. Would if you could, lame duck. A downpour we want, not your drizzle. Bloom. To drive me mad, Moll. I forgot. Forgive. Moll. We... Still... Bellow, ruthlessly. No, Leopold Bloom, all is changed by woman's will. Since you slept horizontal in Sleepy Hollow, your night of 20 years, return and see. Old Sleepy Hollow calls over the world. Sleepy Hollow, Rip Van Winkle, Rip Van Winkle. Bloom, in tattered moccasins with a rusty fowling piece, tiptoeing, finger-tipping, his haggard, bony, bearded face peering through the diamond panes, cries out, I see her, it's she. The first night at Matt Dillon's, but that dress, the green, and her hair is dyed gold, and he... Bellow laughs mockingly.
That's your daughter, you owl, with a Mullingar student.
Millie Bloom, fair-haired, green-vested, slim-sandaled, her blue scarf in the sea-wind simply swirling, breaks from the arms of her lover and calls, her young eyes wonder-wide. Millie.
My, it's Papley, but, oh, Papley, how old you've grown.
Bellow.
Changed, eh? Our what-not, our writing table where we never wrote, Aunt Hegarty's armchair, our classic reprints of old masters. A man and his men friends are living there in clover. The cuckoo's rest, why not? How many women had you, say? Following them up, dark streets, flat-foot, exciting them by your smothered grunts, what? You male prostitute, blameless dames with parcels of groceries, turn about, sauce for the goose, my gander, oh!
Bloom, they, I, Bellow, cuttingly.
Their heel marks will stamp the brusselette carpet you bought at Wren's auction. In their horseplay with Moll, the rump to find the book flea in her breeches, they will deface the little statue you carried home in the rain for art's sake. They will violate the secrets of your bottom drawer. Pages will be torn from your handbook of astronomy to make them pipe spills, and they will spit in your 10-shilling brass fender from Hampton Leedham's.
Bloom. 10 and 6. The act of low scoundrels. Let me go. I will return. I will prove. A voice.
Swear!
Bloom clenches his fists and crawls forward, a bowie knife between his teeth. Bellow.
As a paying guest or a kept man. Too late. You have made your second best bed, and others must lie in it. Your epitaph is written. You are down and out, and don't you forget it, old bean.
Bloom. Justice. All Ireland versus one. Has nobody... He bites his thumb. Bellow.
Die and be damned to you, if you've any sense of decency or grace about you. I can give you a rare old wine that'll send you skipping to hell and back. Sign a will, and leave us any coin you have. If you have none, see you damn well. Get it, steal it, rob it. We'll bury you in our shrubbery jakes, where you'll be dead and dirty with L. Cook Cohen, my step-nephew I married, the bloody L. Goaty procurator and sodomite with a crick in his neck, and my other 10 or 11 husbands, whatever the bugger's names were, suffocated in the one cesspool.
He explodes in a loud, phlegmy laugh.
We'll manure ya, Mr. Flower!
He pipes scoffingly.
Bye-bye, Poldy! Bye-bye, Papley!
Bloom clasps his head.
My willpower, memory, I have sinned, I have suffered.
He weeps tearlessly. Bellow sneers.
Cry, babby! Crocodile tears!
Bloom, broken, closely veiled for the sacrifice, sobs, his face to the earth. The passing bell is heard. Dark-shawled figures of the circumcised, in sackcloth and ashes, stand by the wailing wall. M. Shalomovitz, Joseph Goldwater, Moses Herzog, Harris Rosenberg, M. Moisel, J. Citron, Minnie Watchman, O. Mastiansky, the Reverend Leopold Abramovitz Chasen. With swaying arms, they wail in Numa over the recreant Bloom. The circumcised, in a dark guttural chant, as they cast Dead Sea fruit upon him, no flowers.
Shema Israel Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad.
The voice is sighing.
So he's gone. Ah, yes, yes indeed, Bloom. Never heard of no queer kind of chap. There's the widow. That's so, ah, yes.
From the sooty pyre the flame of gum campfire ascends. The pall of incense smoke screens and disperses.
Out of her oak frame, a nymph with hair unbound, lightly clad in tea-brown art colours, descends from her grotto, and passing under interlacing yews, stands over Bloom. The yews, their leaves whispering,
"Sister, our sister."
"Shh," the nymph softly.
"Mortal,"
kindly.
"Nay, dost not weepest."
Bloom crawls jellily forward under the boughs streaked by sunlight with dignity.
"This position, I felt it was expected of me. Force of habit."
The nymph.
"Mortal,
you found me in evil company. High kickers, Costa picnic makers, pugilists, popular generals, immoral panto boys in flesh tights, and the nifty shimmy dancers, La Aurora and Carini, musical act, the hit of the century. I was hidden in cheap pink paper that smelt of rock oil. I was surrounded by the stale smut of clubmen, stories to disturb callow youth, ads for transparencies, trued-up dice and bus pads, proprietary articles and why wear a truss with testimonial from ruptured gentlemen, useful hints to the married."
Bloom lifts a turtle head towards her lap. "We have met before, on another star."
The nymph, sadly.
"Rubber goods, never rip. Brandless applied to the aristocracy. Corsets for men. I cure fits or money refunded. Unsolicited testimonials for Professor Waldsman's wonderful chest exuber. My bust developed 4 inches in 3 weeks, reports Mrs. Gus Rublin, with photo."
Bloom. "You mean photo bits?"
The nymph. "I do. You bore me away, framed me in oak and tinsel, set me above your marriage couch. Unseen, one summer eve, you kissed me in 4 places, and with loving pencil you shaded my eyes, my bosom, and my shame."
Bloom humbly kisses her long hair.
"Your classic curves, beautiful, immortal. I was glad to look on you, to praise you, a thing of beauty, almost to pray."
The nymph.
"During dark nights, I heard your praise."
Bloom, quickly. "Yes, yes, you mean that I—" Sleep reveals the worst side of everyone, children, perhaps, except I know I fell out of my bed, or rather was pushed. Steel wine is said to cure snoring. For the rest of it is that English invention, pamphlet of which I received some days ago, incorrectly addressed. It claims to afford a noiseless, inoffensive vent.
He sighs. "'Twas ever thus. Frailty, thy name is marriage."
The nymph, her fingers in her ears.
"And words, they are not in my dictionary."
Bloom, "you understood them?" The ewes, shh. The nymph covers her face with her hand.
"What have I not seen in that chamber? What must my eyes look down on?"
Bloom, apologetically, "I know, soiled personal linen, wrong side up with care. The quoits are loose, from Gibraltar by long sea, long ago." The nymph bends her head.
"Worse, worse."
Bloom reflects precautiously. "That antiquated commode. It wasn't her weight. She scaled just 11 stone 9. She put on 9 pounds after weaning. It was a crack in want of glue, eh? And that absurd orange-keyed utensil, which has only one handle." The sound of a waterfall is heard in bright cascade. The waterfall,
"Pula fuka, pula fuka, pula fuka, pula fuka."
The ewes mingling their boughs.
"Listen, whisper, she is right, our sister. We grew by pula fuka waterfall. We gave shade on languorous summer days."
John Wise Nolan, in the background, in Irish National Forester's uniform, doffs his plumed hat. "Prosper, give shade on languorous days, trees of Ireland." The ewes murmuring,
"Who came to Pula Fuca with a high school excursion, who left his nut-questing classmates to seek our shade."
Bloom, pigeon-breasted, bottle-shouldered, padded in nondescript juvenile grey and black striped suit, too small for him, white tennis shoes, boarded stockings with turnover tops, and a red school cap with badge. "I was in my teens, a growing boy. A little then sufficed, a jolting car, the mingling odours of the ladies' cloakroom and lavatory, the throng penned tight on the old royal stairs for their love crushes, instincts of the herd, and the dark sex-smelling theatre, unbridled vice. Even a price list of their hosiery. And then the heat. There were sunspots that summer, end of school, and tipsy cake. Halcyon days."
Halcyon days, high school boys in blue and white football jerseys and shorts. Master Donald Turnbull, Master Abraham Chatterton, Master Owen Goldberg, Master Jack Meredith, Master Percy Apjohn stand in a clearing of the trees and shout to Master Leopold Bloom. The Halcyon days,
"Mackerel! Live us again! Hooray!"
They cheer. Bloom, hobbledehoy, warm-gloved, mama-muffled, stunned with spent snowballs, struggles to rise.
"Again, I feel 16. What a lark. Let's ring all the bells in Montague Street."
He cheers feebly.
"Hooray for the high school!"
The echo.
"Fool!"
The ewes rustling.
"She is right, our sister. Whisper."
Whispered kisses are heard in all the wood.
Faces of hamadryads peep out from the boles and among the leaves, and break blossoming into bloom.
Who profaned our silent shade?
The nymph, coyly through parting fingers.
There, in the open air.
The ewes sweeping downward.
Sister, yes, and on our virgin sward.
The waterfall.
Pula fuka, pula fuka, fuka fuka, fuka fuka.
The nymph with wide fingers.
Oh, infamy.
Bloom, I was precocious. Youth, the fawns. I sacrificed to the god of the forest. The flowers that bloom in the spring. It was pairing time. Capillary attraction is a natural phenomenon. Lottie Clark, flaxen-haired, I saw at her night toilette through ill-closed curtains with poor papa's opera glasses. The wanton ate grass wildly. She rolled downhill at Rialto Bridge to tempt me with her flow of animal spirits. She climbed a crooked tree, and I, a saint, couldn't resist it. The demon possessed me. Besides, who saw? Staggering Bob, a white-polled calf, thrusts a ruminating head with humid nostrils through the foliage. Staggering Bob.
Me see.
Bloom. Simply satisfying a need. With pathos. No girl would, when I went girling. Too ugly. They wouldn't play. High on Ben Hoth, through rhododendrons, a nanny goat passes, plump-uddered, butty-tailed, dropping currants. The nanny goat. Bleats.
Nanny.
Bloom, hatless, flushed, covered with burrs of thistledown and gorse-pine, regularly engaged, circumstances alter cases. He gazes intently downwards on the water, 32 head over heels per second, press nightmare, giddy Elijah, fall from cliff, sad end of government printer's clerk. Through silver-silent summer air, the dummy of Bloom, rolled in a mummy, rolls rotatingly from the lion's head cliff into the purple waiting waters. The dummy mummy,
bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-bil-b
sails, sending a broadening plume of coal smoke from her funnel towards the land. Councillor Nannetti, alone on deck in dark alpaca, yellow kite-faced, his hand in his waistcoat opening, declaims, "When my country takes her place among the nations of the earth, then, and not till then, let my epitaph be written. I have, Bloom, done." Pff. The nymph, loftily, "We immortals, as you saw today, have not such a place, and no hair there either. We are stone-cold and pure. We eat electric light." She arches her body in lascivious crispation, placing her forefinger in her mouth. "Spoke to me, heard from behind. How then could you?" Bloom, pacing the heather abjectly, "Oh, I have been a perfect pig. Enemas, too, I have administered. 1/3 of a pint of quassia, to which I had a tablespoonful of rock salt, up the fundament, with Hamilton Long's syringe, the lady's friend." The nymph, "In my presence. The powder puff." She blushes and makes a knee. "And the rest?" Bloom, dejected, "Yes, Peccavi. I have paid homage on that living altar, where the back changes name." With sudden fervor, "For why should the dainty scented jeweled hand, the hand that rules—" Figures wind serpenting in slow woodland pattern around the tree stems, cooing. The voice of Kitty in the thicket, "Show us one of them cushions." The voice of Florrie, "Here." A grouse wings clumsily through the underwood. The voice of Lynch in the thicket, "Phew, piping hot." The voice of Zoe from the thicket, "Came from a hot place." The voice of Virag, a bird chief, blue-streaked and feathered in war panoply, with his assegai, striding through a crackling canebrake over beechmast and acorns.
"Hot, hot, where Sitting Bull?"
Bloom, "It overpowers me, the warm impress of her warm form. Even to sit where a woman has sat, especially with divaricated sighs, as though to grant the last favours, most especially with previously well-uplifted white sateen coat-pants. So womanly full. It fills me full." The waterfall.
"Fill a fuller, pool a fuka, pool a fuka, pool a fuka."
The ewes, "Shh, sister, speak." The nymph, eyeless in nun's white habit, coif in huge winged wimple, softly, with remote eyes.
"Tranquilla convent, Sister Agatha, Mount Carmel, the apparitions of Knock and Lourdes, no more desire."
She reclines her head, sighing.
"Only the ethereal, where dreamy, creamy gull waves o'er the waters dull."
Bloom half rises. His back trousers button snaps. The button. Bip! Two sluts of the groom dance rainily by, shawled, yelling flatly. The sluts.
"Oh, Leopold lost the pen of his drawers. He didn't know what to do. To keep it up, to keep it up."
Bloom, coldly. "You have broken the spell. The last straw. If there were only ethereal, where would you all be, postulants and novices? Shy but willing, like an ass pissing." the yews, their silver foil of leaves precipitating, their skinny arms aging and swaying.
Deciduously,
the nymph,
sacrilege, to attempt my virtue.
A large moist stain appears on her robe.
Sully my innocence, you are not fit to touch the garment of a pure woman.
She clutches in her robe.
Wait, Satan, you'll sing no more love songs. Amen, 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 amen.
She draws a poniard, and clad in the sheath mail of an elected knight of nine, strikes at his loins.
Necum!
Bloom starts up, seizes her hand.
Hoi, Nabrakada, cat of nine lives. Fair play, madam, no pruning knife. The fox and the grapes, is it?
What do we lack with your barbed wire? Crucifix not thick enough? He clutches a veil.
A holy abbot you want, or Brophy, the lame gardener, or the spoutless statue of the water carrier, or good mother Alphonsus, eh, Reynard?
The nymph, with a cry, flees from him, unveiled, her plaster cast cracking, a cloud of stench escaping from the cracks.
Polly!
Bloom calls after her.
As if you didn't get it on the double yourselves. No jerks or multiple mucosities all over you. I tried it.
Your strength, our weakness. What's our stud fee? What will you pay on the nail? You fee men dancers on the Riviera, I read. The fleeing nymph raises a keen.
Eh? I have 16 years of black slave labour behind me, and would a jury give me 5 shillings alimony tomorrow, eh? Fool someone else, not me,
he sniffs. But onions, stale, sulphur, grease. The figure of Bella Cohen stands before him.
Bella, you'll know me the next time.
Bloom, composed, regards her. Passé, mutton dressed as lamb. Long in the tooth and superfluous hairs, a raw onion the last thing at night would benefit your complexion. And take some double chin drill. Your eyes are as vapid as that last eyes of your stuffed fox. They have the dimensions of your other features, that's all. I'm not a triple screw propeller. Bella, contemptuously.
You're not game, in fact.
Her sow cunt barks.
Foract!
Bloom, contemptuously. Clean your nailless middle finger first. The cold spunk of your bully is dripping from your coxcomb. Take a handful of hay and wipe yourself.
Bella, I know you, canvasser. Dead cod.
Bloom, I saw him. Kipkeeper, pox and leap vendor. Bella turns to the piano. Which of you was playing the dead march from Saul?
Zoe, me. Mind your cornflowers.
She darts to the piano and bangs chords on it with crossed arms.
The cats ramble through the slag.
She glances back. Eh? Who's making love to my sweeties? She darts back to the table. What's yours is mine, and what's mine is my own. Kitty, disconcerted, coats her teeth with a silver paper. Bloom approaches Zoe. Bloom, gently.
Give me back the potato, will you?
Zoe.
For it's a fine thing, and a super fine thing.
Bloom, with feeling. It is nothing, but still a relic of poor mama.
Zoe. Give a thing and take it back. God'll ask you where is that. You'll say, you don't know. God'll send you down below.
Bloom. There's a memory attached to it. I should like to have it.
Stephen. To have or not to have, that is the question.
Zoe. Here. She holds up a reef of her slip, revealing her bare thigh, and unrolls the potato from the top of her stocking.
Those that hides knows where to find.
Bella frowns.
Here, this isn't a musical peep show, and don't you smash that piano. Who's paying here?
She goes to the pianola. Stephen fumbles in his pocket, and taking out a banknote by its corner, hands it to her. Stephen, with exaggerated politeness,
this silken purse I made out of the sow's ear of the public. Madam, excuse me, if you allow me.
He indicates vaguely Lynch and Bloom.
We are all in the same sweepstake.
Kinch and Lynch.
Dans ce bordel où tenon nostre ta.
Lynch calls from the hearth.
Dedalus, give you a blessing for me.
Stephen hands Bella a coin.
Gold. She has it.
Bella looks at the money, then at Zoe, Florrie and Kitty.
Do you want 3 girls? It's 10 shillings here.
Stephen delightedly.
100,000 apologies.
He fumbles again and takes out and hands her 2 crowns.
Permit, brevi manu.
My sight is somewhat troubled.
Bella goes to the table to count the money, while Stephen talks to himself in monosyllables. Zoe bounds over to the table. Kitty leans over Zoe's neck. Lynch gets up, rights his cap, and clasping Kitty's waist, adds his head to the group. Florrie strives heavily to rise.
Oh, my foot's asleep.
She limps over to the table. Bloom approaches. Bella, Zoe, Kitty, Lynch, Bloom, chattering and squabbling.
The gentleman 10 shillings, paying for the 3.
Allow me a moment.
This gentleman pays separate. Who's touching it? Oh,
mind you, your pension.
Are you staying the night or a short time? Who did?
You're a liar, excuse me.
The gentleman paid down like a gentleman. Drink.
It's long after 11. Stephen, at the pianola, making a gesture of abhorrence.
No bottles. What, 11? A riddle.
Zoe, lifting up her pettigown and folding a half-sovereign into the top of her stocking.
Hard end on the flat of me back.
Lynch, lifting Kitty from the table.
Come,
Kitty.
Wait.
She clutches the two crowns. Flurry.
And me.
Lynch. Hoopla. He lifts her, carries her, and bumps her down on the sofa. Stephen.
The fox crew, the cocks flew. The bells in heaven were striking 11. 'Tis time for her poor soul to get out of heaven.
Bloom quietly lays a half-sovereign on the table between Bella and Florrie. So, allow me. He takes up the pound note. 3 times 10 were square. Bella, admiringly.
You're such a sly boots, old cocky. I could kiss you.
Zoe points.
Hem, deep as a draw well.
Lynch bends Kitty back over the sofa and kisses her. Bloom goes with the pound note to Stephen. Bloom, this is yours. Stephen,
how is that? Led astray, or absent-minded beggar?
He fumbles again in his pocket and draws out a handful of coins. An object falls. That fell. Bloom, stooping, picks up and hands a box of matches. This, Stephen.
Lucifer, thanks.
Bloom, quietly. You had better hand over that cash to me to take care of. Why pay more? Stephen hands him all his coins.
Be just before you are generous.
Bloom, I will, but is it wise? He counts. 1, 7, 11, and 5, 6, 11. I don't answer for what you may have lost. Stephen.
Why striking 11? Proper oxyton, moment before the next.
Lessing says. Thirsty fox. He laughs loudly.
Burying his grandmother. Probably he killed her.
Bloom. That is 1 pound 6 and 11. 1 pound 7, say. Stephen.
Doesn't matter a rambling damn.
Bloom. No, but... Stephen comes to the table. Cigarette, please. Lynch tosses a cigarette from the sofa to the table.
And so Georgina Johnson is dead and married.
A cigarette appears on the table. Stephen looks at it.
Wonder. Parlour magic. Married.
He strikes a match and proceeds to light the cigarette with enigmatic melancholy. Lynch, watching him.
You would have a better chance of lighting it if you held the match nearer.
Stephen brings the match nearer his eye.
Link's eye. Must get glasses. Broke them yesterday. 16 years ago. Distance. The eye sees all flat.
He draws the match away. It goes out.
Brain thinks. Near. Far. Ineluctable modality of the visible.
He frowns mysteriously.
Sphinx. The beast that has 2 backs at midnight. Married.
Zoe.
It was a commercial traveller married her and took it away with him.
Florrie nods.
Mr. Lamb from London.
Stephen.
Lamb of London, who takest away the sins of our world.
Lynch, embracing Kitty on the sofa, chants deeply.
Dona nobis pacem.
The cigarette slips from Stephen's fingers. Bloom picks it up and throws it into the grate.
Bloom, don't smoke. You ought to eat.
Cursed dog I met, to Zoe.
You have nothing?
Zoe.
Is he hungry?
Stephen extends his hand to her smiling and chants to the air of the blood oath in the dusk of the gods.
Hog in the hunger, frog in the frau, macht uns alle kaputt.
Zoe, tragically.
Hamlet, I am thy father's gimlet.
She takes his hand.
Blue-eyed beauty, I'll read your hand.
She points to his forehead.
No wit, no wrinkles. She counts. 2, 3, Mars, that's courage.
Stephen shakes his head.
No kid.
Lynch.
Sheet lightning courage, the youth who could not shiver and shake, to Zoe.
Who taught you palmistry?
Zoe turns.
Ask my bollocks that I haven't got.
To Stephen.
I see it in your face. The eye, like that.
She frowns, with lowered head. Lynch, laughing, slaps Kitty behind twice.
Like that, pandypat.
Twice loudly a pandypat cracks. The coffin of the pianola flies open. The bald little round jack-in-the-box head of Father Dolan springs up. Father Dolan.
Anybody want flogging? Broke his glasses? Lazy, idle little schemer. See it in your eye.
Mild, benign, rectorial, reproving. The head of Don John Conmee rises from the pianola coffin. Don John Conmee.
Now, Father Dolan, now I'm sure that Stephen is a very good little boy.
Zoe, examining Stephen's palm. Woman's hand. Stephen murmurs.
Continue, lie, hold me, caress. I never could read his handwriting except his criminal thumbprint on the haddock.
Zoe.
What day were you born?
Stephen.
Thursday. Today.
Zoe.
Thursday's child is far to go.
She traces lines on his hand.
Line of fate. Influential friends.
Florrie, pointing.
Imagination.
Zoe.
Mount to the moon. You'll meet with her.
She peers at his hands abruptly.
I won't tell you what's not good for you. Or do you want to know?
Bloom detaches her finger and offers his palm. More harm than good. Here, read mine. Bella. Show. She turns up Bloom's hand. I thought so. Knobby knuckles for the women. Zoe, peering at Bloom's palm.
Gridiron travels beyond the sea and marry money.
Bloom, wrong. Zoe, quickly.
Oh, I see. Short little finger. Hen-pecked husband. That wrong.
Black Liz, a huge rooster, hatching in a chalked circle, rises, stretches her wings and clucks. Black Liz,
gotta cluck, cluck, cluck.
She sidles from her new-laid egg and waddles off. Bloom points to his hand. That wheel there is an accident. Fell and cut it 22 years ago. I was 16. Zoe.
I see, says the blind man. Tell us news.
Stephen.
See, moves to one great goal. I am 22, too. 16 years ago, I 22, tumbled. 22 years ago, he 16, fell off his hobby horse.
He winces.
Hurt my hand somewhere. Must see a dentist. Money.
Zoe whispers to Florrie. They giggle. Bloom releases his hand and writes idly on the table in backhand, penciling slow curves. Florrie.
What?
A hackney car, number 324, with a gallant buttocked mare, driven by James Barton, Harmony Avenue, Donnybrook, trots past. Blazes Boylan and Lenehan sprawl swaying on the side seats. The almond boots crouches behind on the axle. Sadly over the cross-blind, Lydia Deuce and Mina Kennedy gaze. The boots, jogging, mocks them with thumb and wriggling worm finger.
Ha ha! Have you the horn?
Bronze by gold, they whisper. Zoe, to Florrie, whisper. They whisper again. Over the well of the car, Blazes Boylan leans, his boater straw set sideways, a red flower in his mouth. Lenehan, in a yachtsman's cap and white shoes, officiously detaches a long hair from Blazes Boylan's shoulder. Lenehan,
ho, oh, what do I here behold?
We are brushing the cobwebs off a few quims. Boylan, seated, smiles, plucking a turkey. Lenehan, a good night's work. Boylan, holding up 4 thick, blunt-ungulated fingers, winks.
Blazes, Kate. Up to sample of your money back.
He holds out a forefinger. Smell that. Lenehan smells gleefully.
Ah, lobster and mayonnaise, ah.
Zoe and Florrie laugh together.
Ha 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 ha.
Boylan jumps surely from the car and calls loudly for all to hear.
Hello, Bloom! Mrs. Bloom, up yet?
Bloom, in a flunky's plum plush coat and knee breeches, buff stockings and powdered wig.
I'm afraid not, sir. The last articles...
Boylan tosses him 6 months.
Here, to buy yourself a gin and splash.
He hangs his hat smartly on a peg of Bloom's antlered head.
Show me in. I have a little private business with your wife. You understand?
Bloom, thank you, sir. Yes, sir. Madam Tweedy is in her bath, sir.
Marion,
he ought to feel himself highly honoured.
She plops, splashing out of the water.
Raoul, darling, come and dry me. I'm in my pelt. Only my new hat and a carriage sponge.
Boylan, a merry twinkle in his eye.
Topping.
Bella.
What? What is it?
Zoe whispers to her. Marion.
Let him look the pishog, pimp, and scourge himself. I'll write to a powerful prostitute, or Bartolomona, the bearded woman, to raise wheels out on him, an inch thick, and make him bring me back a signed and stamped receipt.
Bella, laughing.
Ho, 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 ho.
Boylan, to Bloom over his shoulder.
You can apply your eye to the keyhole and play with yourself while I just go through her a few times.
Bloom, thank you, sir. I will, sir. May I bring 2 men chums to witness the deed and take a snapshot?
He holds an ointment jar. Vaseline, sir. Orange flower? Lukewarm water? Kitty, from the sofa.
Tell us, Florrie, tell us. What?
Florrie whispers to her, whispering love words, murmur lip-lapping, loudly. Popismic plop-slop. Mina Kennedy, her eyes upturned.
Oh, it must be like the scented geraniums and lovely peaches. Oh, he simply idolizes every bit of her, stuck together, covered with kisses.
Lydia Deuce, her mouth opening.
Yum, yum, always carrying her in the room, doing it. Ride a cock horse. You could hear them in Paris and New York, like mouthfuls of strawberries and cream.
Kitty laughing. Boylan's voice, sweetly, hoarsely, in the pit of his stomach.
Ah, good blaze, crook, brook arch, crash.
Marion's voice, hoarsely, sweetly, rising to her throat.
Oh, wees wash, kiss him a poo and a pork.
Bloom, his eyes wildly dilated, clasps himself.
Cho, hi, cho, clower, more, shoot.
Bella, Zoe, Florrie, Kitty.
Ho, ho, ha, ha, hee, hee.
Lynch points, the mirror up to nature. He laughs. Stephen and Bloom gaze in the mirror. The face of William Shakespeare, beardless, appears there, rigid in facial paralysis, crowned by the reflection of the reindeer-antlered hat-rack in the hall. Shakespeare, in dignified ventriloquy.
"'Tis the loud laugh bespeaks the vacant mind," to Bloom.
Thou foughtest as how thou wastest invisible. Gaze. He crows with a black capon's laugh.
Ya go go. How my old fella choked is Thursday a momum. Ya go go.
Bloom smiles yellowly at the whores. When will I hear the joke? Zoe. Before you twice married and once a widower. Bloom. Lapses are condoned, even the great Napoleon, when measurements were taken near the skin after his death. Mrs. Dignam, widow woman, her snub nose and cheeks flushed with death talk, tears, and Tunney's tawny sherry, hurries by in her weeds, her bonnet awry, rouging and powdering her cheeks, lips, and nose, a pen chivying her brood of signets. Beneath her skirt appear her late husband's everyday trousers and turned-up boots, large eights. She holds a Scottish widow's insurance policy and large marquee umbrella under which her brood runs with her, Patsy hopping on one short foot, his collar loose, a hank of pork steaks dangling, Freddy whimpering, Susie with a crying cod's mouth, Alice struggling with the baby. She cuffs them on, her streamers flaunting aloft. Freddy,
ah, ma, you're dragging me along. Susie, mama, the beef tea is fizzing over.
Shakespeare, with paralytic rage,
wedda secker who killer fast.
The face of Martin Cunningham, bearded, refeatures Shakespeare's beardless face. The marquee umbrella sways drunkenly. The children run aside. Under the umbrella appears Mrs. Cunningham in merry widow hat and kimono gown. She glides, sidling and bowing, twisting Japanesely. Mrs. Cunningham sings,
"And they call me the Jewel of Asia."
Martin Cunningham gazes on her impassive, immense, most bloody awful demi-rep. Stephen,
"Et exulta bunter cornua justi. Queens lay with prize bulls. Remember Parsifae, for whose lust my grand old gross father made the first confession box. Forget not Madam Gristle Stevens, nor the swine signs of the House of Lambert. And Moa was drunk with wine, and his ark was open."
Bella, "None of that here. Come to the wrong shop." Lynch, "Let him alone. He's back from Paris." Zoe runs to Stephen and links him.
"Oh, go on, give us some parlez-vous."
Stephen claps hat on head and leaps over to the fireplace, where he stands with shrugged shoulders, finny hands outspread, a painted smile on his face. Lynch, pommeling on the sofa, "Rum, rum, rum, rum." Stephen gabbles with marionette jerks.
"Thousand places of entertainment, to expenses your evenings, with lovely ladies, sailing gloves, and other things, perhaps her heart. Beer chops, perfect fashionable house, very eccentric, where lots cocottes beautiful dressed, much about princesses, like our dancing can-can, and walk in there Parisian clownries, extra foolish for bachelors foreigns, the same if talking, a poor English, how much smart they are on things love and sensations voluptuous. Misters very select for its pleasure, must to visit heaven and hell, show with mortuary candles, and they tears silver which occur every night. Perfectly shocking, terrific, of religion's things, mockery, seen in universal world. All chic women's, which arrive full of modesty, then disrobe and squeal loud to see vampire man, debauch nun, very fresh young, with des sous troublons."
He clacks his tongue loudly.
"Oh la la! Ce pif qui la!"
Lynch.
"Vive le vampire!"
The whores.
"Bravo! Parlez-vous!"
Stephen, grimacing with head back, laughs loudly, clapping himself.
"Great success of laughing. Angels, much prostitutes like, and holy apostles, big damn ruffians, demi-mundane, nicely handsome, sparkling of diamonds, very amiable costumed. Or do you, a fond better, what belongs de modern's pleasure, turpitude of old man's?"
He points about him with grotesque gestures, which Lynch and the whores reply to.
"Caoutchouc statue woman, reversible, or life-size Tom Peep Toms, virgins, nudities, very lesbic, the kiss 5-10 times. Enter gentlemen to see in mirrors, every position, trapezes all that machine there besides, also, if desire act awfully bestial, butcher's boy.